can.
We used to live at Ayodhya over where Crystal Hermitage is, and we used to have no cars, and we'd walk to work every day. And I worked up in the, what is the Hansa Temple, which was the publications building, which was called Pubble. And it was very half-finished, and there was a lot of wildlife in there with us, the bats being one example, but just in generally we shared it with the lion and the lizard, kind of. And I remember one day, this was a small thing, but I came in, and on my typewriter, before computers, there was a very small spider. And that spider was sort of, with great energy, moving around the keys. And it would sort of go up, you know, up to the platen, and it would sort of sit there for a while and enjoy that, and it would feel inspired to come and find the G, and then it would sort of, you know, view the world from the perspective of the G, and then it would go over to the shift bar. And I was just watching it like this. And all of a sudden, I had this thought of how completely powerful I was in regard to that spider, and all by myself, I began to follow the spider sort of like this. And just as I was doing that, I had this extremely eerie sensation of Divine Mother with her thumb on top of me. And I had this feeling of her having followed me all morning and watched me, you know, come across the hill and go across the dam and chatter with my friends and do this and do that with the same sort of self-important little spirit that I was seeing in the spider. And it was just so layer upon layer, such a sensation of, I think that my life is so strong and so much under my control, and it's just about as purposeful and within my command as that little spider. You know, and I finally just let him go away. Obviously, I wasn't going to take his life at that point. But those images are really worth having. Because also you have to ask yourself the question, you know, in as much as this could be my last breath, how do I want to spend it? You know, what do I really want to be doing with my consciousness? You know, especially as we talk about, there's one in here later. In fact, it's this one right now. Everything is interconnected. Then 18th one says, I sometimes think that never blows so red. The rose is where some buried Caesar bled. That every hyacinth the garden wears dropped in its lap from some once lovely head. And the purpose of this is to express to us the idea of how all life is interconnected. And that even this, the flower that's growing here on the soil is affected by the soil in which it's growing. And Swami writes, Master writes about how the environment influences us, but we in turn influence our environment. And the thoughts that we think are all a collection of what everyone else has thought before. And he gives us several different pieces of advice, which is to draw upon the beautiful energies that have come before us. But he also uses this to encourage us to take more responsibility. You know, we tend to think that what we have in the privacy of our own mind is our own business, but it's not at all true. What we have in our mind is a projection that's going out, that it's making the world what it is, in a very, very true sense. I mean, sometimes people are a little naive and they're encouraging us to think that we can just sort of think a whole new level of creation. But it isn't. It's also is a truth to it. And it has this line here. We quoted this once. Let our thoughts be beautiful and fragrant, that the memory we leave behind us be a blessing on the earth. And when you think about that, every time you're in any environment that you're in, you realize that when you're in that environment, you're going to walk away from it. And what will be the memory that will be left behind? What vibrations will you have planted in that space? When you walk into a grocery store, what vibrations will you have planted in that space? And elsewhere, Master also writes, don't think it's all just about what you do. It's really just entirely your vibrations, what you're emanating. Some of the most influential people just influence through their vibrations. It's not anything that they say. I mean, we know people in our lives who are just so uplifting to be with. We're fortunate in that we have friends like that. And it isn't anything particular necessarily that they say or do. They may be clever, they may not be clever. But there's just something that comes out of them that's so supportive to us. Think about the responsibility and the possibilities also of being in that way ourselves, because it's all one interconnected flow. And that also helps give us strength when we feel like we don't have the power to do something or we don't have the energy, that we can yet also, I mean, just draw on the masters or draw on the atmosphere around us to not live so small. That's all. Just not live so small. It's these multiple levels. One level is that we're just here for a short time and it just comes and goes. And it's an up and down constantly. And the only thing that's permanent is the consciousness that we have. That's what he says over and over. Everything goes away. All you have is your consciousness. At all times, that's all you have. We think we have all these other realities, but all we ever have is our consciousness. Ever. Any comments or questions? Were you going to comment on that side? No. Okay. This number 19 is a little more esoteric. And this delightful herb, whose tender green fledges the river's lip on which we lean, ah, lean upon it lightly, for who knows from what once lovely lip it springs unseen. Now, what Master says this one means, and I had to really just like, you look at this one and you think, gee, I wonder what this means. And he talks about the herb is the new thoughts of divine perception. The river's lip is the column of energy up the spine, the divine source within us. And these new sensations grow upon this, the bank of this inner energy, and that we lean upon it because we rely upon it. But he says, be sensitive, concentrate very sensitively because it comes from the divine. So in other words, this that you're enjoying, you have to relate to it in the right vibration. You have to recognize that these new perceptions of reality are coming from your inner self, and you have to tune into that very sensitively. When Swamiji talks about how to tune into intuition and how to be intuitive and how to have a lot of intuition, one of the things he comments on is the very nature of intuition is that it's ephemeral. It's very, very delicate. And we have such an inclination to say, well, I feel intuitively inspired to do this. And we take what is really completely non-physical and then we fix it in stone and then we argue with people and then we attach our ego to it. And as a result, nothing more ever comes of it. And even the little bit of intuition we have gets very distorted. So this particular chapter is saying when these new intuitive ways of understanding the spirit come to you, they come from deep within your inner self. They're not a product of the ego. So the first thing we have to understand is we have to tune in that it comes from deep inside my inner nature. And then we have to be very sensitive to it further, because the source of that is really the divine. And if we want to draw more and more of that in, we have to relate to it in just that way. And above all, we have to keep the ego out of it, which is the trickiest part. Because as soon as we start getting a little of that, we finally have something to be proud of. That's the joke, you know. As soon as you get a little spiritual, the ego finally has a reason to boast. Look at me, I'm getting spiritual. Swami tells that story in the path, how he worked so hard on his humility that became proud of being humble. And that was when Master said, poor Walter, he's so confused. And then later, when he got himself straightened out, Master said, Walter was on his high horse, but now he's coming our way. And what that was really about was that Walter was trying too hard to do it on his own. He wasn't conscious enough of what the source of those sensitive inspirations were. That's what this is a warning about. Don't get into pride, don't get into ego, just because a little bit has come to you. You don't know where this is coming from. You don't know what real source this is. This is from the divine. Ah, my beloved, fill the cup that clears today of past regrets and future fears. Tomorrow? Why, tomorrow I may be myself with yesterday's 7,000 years. Isn't that wonderful? Fill the cup that clears today of past regrets and future fears. Swami Master talks about that a long time. Past regrets and future fears. The way he puts it is like you regret so much that we made karmic mistakes in the past and we really fear that we're going to have to pay for them in the future. And so you're sort of caught between those two realities. You know that you've done wrong and you know that the karmic price of that is going to come. But he also says, what is the point? If we go into divine consciousness, we don't have to live out all that karma. It changes all that karma. One, it literally changes it because it dissolves the vortices in the spine. The practice of Kriya Yoga, as an example, which Omar Khayyam must have done something like Kriya, if not Kriya proper, I mean, in exactly the same way. Because when you meditate correctly and raise kundalini energy up the spine, it draws the seeds of karma out of the chakras and draws them into the river of divine awareness and burns them up. So even if you did in fact have that set in motion in the past, the cup, when the cup is filled with divine awareness, all that energy shifts and you don't face that karma anymore because you've burned it up. That's why Master writes in Autobiography of a Yogi that one Kriya is like 12 years of right living. Because in 12 years, you can kind of gradually get the point and figure out a few things, but one Kriya circulates the energy through all of the chakras, and that they represent the zodiac, the circle of the sun through all the signs of the zodiac. One cycle of Kriya through all the chakras is equivalent to 1 year. And so you live through a whole year, and you burn up all that karma, and you don't have to face it anymore. So when we're asking, this is not just a poetic thought, it's a real thought. You know, fill the cup, beloved, fill the cup that clears today of past regrets and of future fears, that burns up all the karma, and I don't have to worry about the past anymore, and I don't have to fear the future. I mean, think how much time we all spend caught in that, thinking about how I wished I'd done it differently, and I'm nervous about what's going to happen tomorrow. I mean, just even try with one's imagination to project what life would be like if we really were cleared of those realities. Isn't that something? Swamiji had a picture taken of his aura, just by an aura photographer. And some of you have seen it. It's a beautiful, he's all indigo. And it's a very interesting picture because it's completely consistent. It's just consistently this indigo color, and it's all over him. You know, it almost obliterates him. I mean, I don't have any idea what that is. It Carillion photography, whatever. I don't even know what it is. But his photograph is certainly different than most other people's photograph. And the people who took the picture also said they'd never seen a picture anything like it. Now, Swami himself, actually, you never know. He passed that picture out. He showed it to everyone. He talked to everyone about it. And he said something that was an interesting sort of comment on it, related but not exactly. He said quite a few years ago, he mentioned that his subconscious is no different than his conscious mind. That he never dreams in ways that are not exactly the same as he is now. Do you understand what I mean? That there's nothing in his subconscious. I mean, that's really quite a statement. Because what that's saying is that there isn't any karma. There's nothing that is from the past that's going to affect the future. It's all balanced. I mean, that's what Master said to him. Everything is balanced for you now. Everything is balanced. When Master told him that he would find God at the end of this lifetime, he said, everything is balanced. And when Swami was talking about the blue of this picture, that was one of the things he was saying about it. Well, he's all the same. There's no piece of him that's holding something back. Now, that's 50 years of Kriya. Swami knows the two times he didn't practice Kriya twice a day, because those were the two times when he had such a high fever that he couldn't. And that's not a small thing. And as he puts it himself, it wasn't an effort to practice Kriya. It was simply the most fun thing he could think of to do. You know, get up every day and, like, what would I like to do today? Well, practicing Kriya is that which he has always been eager to do, because fill the cup. Let me escape from all this past and future. That's what's written here. And then tomorrow, you know why tomorrow? I love that. I may myself be with yesterday's 7,000 years, meaning I just may be gone from here. It just could be over. So now is the moment. We have to do it now. And all that we're really trying to do is find our soul happiness, just piece by piece. It's such a joke. Quatrain 21. Lo, some we loved, the loveliest and best, that time and fate of all their vintage pressed, have drunk their cup a round or two before, and one by one crept silently to rest. And Master comments about this, about how life is a stage and we are all actors. And as he puts it, I love the way he says it. He says, real life is the real stage. And the theater that we make is just a little imitation that we think of afterwards. And even those that we think are imperishably our own, you know, I love you, you love me, you're always going to be with me, and I'm always going to be with you, and you're always going to be with me, and I'm always going to be with you, and you're always going to be with me. Master writes, in fact, he says this on one of his tapes, you know, God sees lovers pledging themselves to all eternity, and he laughs. And then their bleached bones lay on the beach, you know, it's just like, oh Lord. And the whole story in the autobiography of Babaji, you know, keeping Lahiri's place and keeping his copper, his brass water bowl shined and his little cape swept out and his blanket folded. And when they talk about that, I said, what human love can go through incarnations like that and keep consciously? And Babaji says, I watched you as you covered your tiny body with sand and meditated in the sun. You know, with our human egos, we aspire to that. That's our way of expressing our desire for immortality. We mean well. But only the divine has that kind of love for us, really. And so, you know, the loveliest and the best, the ones that were our most favorite, and that we really thought this time we were going to get to keep. Now, bear in mind, our relationships do endure. And they are over long periods of time. And at the end of the path, Swamiji writes about spiritual families and how they're drawn together and how we do in our associations with one another. These are long, repeating relationships. Swamiji has often said the explanation for the harmony of Ananda, which is really extraordinary considering how many diverse types are involved and how many. And yet we really all just get along. I mean, of course, every so often, people will have blow-ups with certain people and you'll just suddenly realize that someone is really quite despicable and you really loathe them. I mean, these thoughts do enter your mind from time to time and sometimes we give expression to them. But nonetheless, it comes and goes. But collectively, even when those little things are going on, they're just those periods of time when you're hating someone for a while or they're hating you, but time passes and you don't even remember. You don't even remember that you had this big thing with someone. But as a whole, we just flow along so well. And Swami writes, because we've just been together so long. You know, Master and his children in this particular branch, Swami's branch of the family, we've just been doing this for a really long time. And that's why you come from a foreign country or you go to a foreign country and you meet people you can't even talk to. But all of a sudden, you just know them. I know. When David and I went to Europe with Swamiji in 1982, it was our first trip there. And that was before Ananda had an established place. And at that time, a woman named Gabriella and a man named Cesare were doing a meditation group in Pisa. I think Gabriella still does it. And they had also acquired a piece of property in which they wanted to have a retreat, and it was sort of somewhere out from there. David and I did not speak word one of Italian. It was the first time I had ever been in Italy. He'd been there before, but we had no Italian. And there were a lot of people who had no English. And we were often with these people who had no English, and we had no Italian. So we were just like totally unable to relate in anything like the way that we would normally relate. And we were in somebody else's car, and Swami was being spirited off with everybody else. I mean, we were useless because we couldn't speak. So we were just in this big caravan. We went for a 2-hour trip. We finally go on this dirt road. We finally get into this place. We go through gates. We get out of the car. We go through different rooms. We climb up buildings. It's sort of this half not quite finished. We go this way and that way, up the stairs, down a long hallway, into like this. And finally we get into this room and there are the masters. And it was just like we never left. And that was the first time for me that I was there in that kind of an atmosphere. That was 20 years ago, so now it's happened a lot. And then all these people, they started singing Door of My Heart in Italian. And it was just so, like, everything changes, everything's the same.